Illinois Municipal League Executive Director Brad Cole joining us this morning. Brad, good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Tom. And, you know, that's why I moved to Carbondale, is I thought it was this essentially the most southern point, and I could stay in Illinois, and I would be in the warmest part of the state possible. But still gets kind of chilly.
Yeah, and then there's derechos and
floods
and all the other stuff.
You know, but so, hey, you know what? Even with all that stuff, you still got Mike Murphy. Yeah, I mean, how can you go wrong
How can you go wrong with Mr. Mike Murphy? You know, I was reading one of the press releases came out last week from your office on December the 11th. It says IML releases fifth volume of Illinois Municipal Policy Journal. And it says in partnership with the Illinois Springfield, University of Illinois Springfield, their fifth volume. This academic journal addresses critical issues Illinois and the municipalities are facing, which have only been exacerbated with combating the current pandemic. And my first thought was, so, big book, huh?
Well, and we started this journal. This is our fifth edition, so we started this several years ago to really highlight some of the issues that municipalities are facing and to put an academic focus on it so that we could really study the issues, not just talk about them, but have real data to support whatever the solutions are that we might propose. We had a partnership with DePaul University for 4 years, and now this we've started with University of Illinois Springfield for the next 5 years, and so this is the first issue of them. Included in this issue, and I'll send you a copy, is our articles that talk about population decline, and we're going to see that as a result of the census that was just undertaken, budgeting and changes in expenditures in municipalities, the impact on the federal reduction in state and local tax deductions, cannabis. Well, here's one that might surprise you.
Yeah.
Police and fire pension funding
right,
in Illinois,
right.
Public safety pension systems. I mean, these are issues that municipal leaders are looking at, and we're trying to come up with solutions and get some academic research so that we can quantify what the problems are and what the solutions are. So, yeah, we're really happy with our Illinois Municipal Policy Journal that we just released.
All right, let's take a listen to one portion of that that you pointed out, fire, police pensions. Now, with communities that are having hard times with money because of COVID, and they say, all right, we're behind the eight ball. We're down $300,000. We're down $400,000, just hypothetically. And you're a small town. And you throw that out there and you say, okay, we want to forgo our police pensions. No, because then they intercept your tax funds. I wonder if that's going to be something that we see in 2021 that's going to shock some communities because they're behind the eight ball financially, while at the same time state says you can't cut there. No. You cut somewhere else because if you don't, we're keeping your taxes. We're intercepting them.
Absolutely, and that's one of the issues that we've been concerned about since 2011 when the current law went into effect that sets the funding target at 90% funded by the year 2040. Of course, every day we get closer to 2040, but the contributions required by the municipality continue to increase. And so if they can't make their contribution, as you pointed out, say they want to just skip a payment, or they can't contribute as much as is required by their actuary because they don't have the money, perhaps because of a global pandemic, well, then the state can intercept the funds that those municipalities are getting from other sources. Could be sales tax revenue, could be motor fuel tax revenue, could be any of the various tax revenues that are available and distributed to communities, the state can take, and that money then goes into the pension fund. Now, nobody wants to not fund the pension funds, but there are some restrictions, mainly the availability of money to pay the contributions. And that's why we've been working on pension reform for so many years and trying to improve the system so we can generate more revenue through the investments, which is the purpose of the consolidation that was signed into law last year, and so many of the other reforms. We're trying to be able to make the payments, not make the payments.
All right, here's another one for you. The cure money. All right, have we seen anybody get a check yet? How about we put it that simple?
Well, thankfully, yes. There have been communities that have started to see some of the disbursements, but it has taken way too long, and you may have another question. I'll save the rest of my rant to make sure I can answer your question.
And there is, because it's a two-parter. I mean, you've literally got stimulus relief being held up. Republicans don't want additional state money. I mean, that's been very clear, especially in the Senate, right? And they're talking about an additional, I want to make sure I get the figure right, because I have $160 billion for state and local funding. That would be separate. Put that aside while they go ahead with this other bill. All right, because this is basically Cure Money Part 2, we'll call it. CARES Money or Cure Money Part 2. Well, we need this money. We need this money. Well, look how this program's worked, right? This was approved March 27th. There was a lot of problems with it, getting it done. And so is this $160 billion, would some legislators say this is bailout money, or that this is financial help needed because of the pandemic? I mean, because I'm hearing in the background, this is bailouts, and we're not doing bailouts.
And you're talking about the next potential round of federal
funding. That could be voted on this week.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, with about $90 billion to state governments, $30 billion to county governments, $30 billion to municipalities, and about $8 billion for tribal governments, nationwide, $160 billion. There are provisions that, well, the distribution provisions are based on proportional population, proportional revenue loss, and or a combination of the two. However, it has been very well spelled out in this legislative proposal at the federal level that no, states cannot use this to make contributions to pension funds or as a bailout for mismanagement, if you will. However, the dollars, if this is approved in the package that I've seen as recently as this morning, a couple hours ago, this can be for lost revenue. So it would be split up in three different tranches of distribution. The first part will go based on revenue losses that states and local governments saw between April 1st and basically September 30th. So that is to make up for lost revenue. So compare this year to last year, what was the difference in your revenue, and that's what you could use. And the second tranche would be from October 1 to March 31 of next year, same type of thing, looking at the lost revenues. Now, that money's not going to become available until June. I mean, that's going to be a while. So that money, we're not going to see that money. The first set we'll see hopefully before the end of the calendar, well, not the end of the year, probably in the next 30 or 45 days. That second tranche wouldn't be till next summer. And then the third part is just whatever's kind of left over. So, I think some people will say it's a bailout, but it's intended to be a relief package for lost revenue. And that's money that's going to go back to these communities. That's what we've advocated for since, actually, I was reviewing some information. As you indicated, the CARES Act was signed into law on March 27th. We started, talking about how to distribute those dollars the day before. March 26th, we said, this is how you need to get this money out. And, of course, it never happened. So we're hoping that this will be more direct to states and local governments, especially the local governments, and then they can use the money to make up for the lost revenue so they can continue to offer the programs and services to their residents.
So you support this in Washington?
Well, we support relief to local governments and state governments with strict parameters such as direct distribution to local governments, not allowing the states to impose additional restrictions or requirements, which is what happened in Illinois. And, we think that there is an absolute need for the communities of all sizes to receive relief. One of the things that I said in all the discussions I've had with members of Congress, both from Illinois and other states, is this money has to be proportional based on population and revenue loss. Can't just go to the big cities, has to go to the small towns as well because they've suffered equally. And just to go back, one of the things that we've complained about is how the state kind of tinkered with the timeline of the Federal CARES Act. And your first question, has anybody gotten this money? Here we are 8 months after this was passed, really almost 9 months after it was passed, and we're just starting to see the funds released through the state of Illinois. The program in Illinois is called Local Cure. CURE stands for Coronavirus Urgent Remediation Emergency. And it took 8 months to get the money.
Yeah, immediate 8 months.
Urgent and emergency.
Yeah.
So we're hopeful that this next round will pass the Congress, and you know that the money can go to the communities and the people that need it.
All right. There's been another issue, and I know you're aware of this. Jackson County Board meeting tonight, and they're talking about enforcement. This is something many mayors have talked to you about, I'm sure. The governor says, contact your mayors, contact your local county commissioners. I asked them what they're doing to keep you safe.
Well, I saw that. The county board is looking to authorize the public health department to enforce the mitigation restrictions is what I saw.
Yeah, and you're out there saying the governor, in some published comments that I read, saying you'd like to have more input on this, and representing your group here, saying we need to have some more input on how this is done. It's not over as far as mitigation efforts and with the high numbers. So what do you hope to achieve with the governor's office on input there?
Well, what we've been trying to talk with them about is just improving the communication. We do have communication. I speak to the governor and his staff, and we've been involved with this obviously since the beginning, but implementing some of these restrictions and the mitigations has been very difficult because the governor and his office has said local officials have to enforce this, but there isn't the authority to do that, and many communities don't have the authority that, you know, you just can't say, well, go enforce this. And so we've been working with the state police, and I've spoken with the director there, Director Kelly, and other folks, and just trying to make sure that local governments know what they're empowered to enforce and know what they are not empowered to enforce. And I think this action by the Jackson County Board indicates that the public health department really needs to take on some of this enforcement, and they need to have that authority.
All right, before I let you go, I've got two more issues I want to hit with you. Tomorrow morning, I talked to Ted Dabrowski. I know you, Ted. You know Ted over at Wire Points, right?
Yes, sir.
And I said, man, could you do some work on the census for me? He's going to have that for us tomorrow morning. But it seems to be pretty clear from published articles, St. Louis Post-Dispatch Friday, that Illinois is going to lose some representation in Washington.
I think all along we've thought that there will be at least one member of Congress, one congressional district that is eliminated after reapportionment. And as you know, I serve on the National Advisory Committee for the U.S. Census Bureau. I'm not speaking for the Bureau, but that's one of the things that I've been most concerned about in making sure that we had a full and complete count, was so that Illinois and other states could maintain their representation. Well, everybody has assumed we're going to lose at least one congressional district, and it could be two. We don't have those numbers yet from the Census Bureau, but if we lose two, then you know we're going to lose representation. And that has been a slippery slope for us, really, because we've lost a half a dozen in the last several censuses.
Right.
You know, we were as high as, I think, 25 members of Congress, and you know, in the 70s and 80s, and then it's been dropping down, and now we have 18 plus our two U.S. senators. So it could be one or two. Either way, we will lose some of the presence that we have in Washington at the federal level.
And that'll come out of our hide downstate Illinois, too.
Absolutely. You'll see an enormous district, possibly. I don't know what the remap is going to be and how they're going to reapportion the districts, but you could have a district that literally is all of south of I-70 to southern Illinois. I mean, it'd be bigger than some states.
That's why remapping is going to be important. And, you know, here's the other thing. That loss of population and loss of representation is dreadful, but the fact that there's a profound economic impact when you have less taxpayers is something worthy of note, too. I mean, it's interesting because when I was reading this press release for the Illinois Municipal Policy Journal, 1,298 cities, villages, and towns, all right? And I wonder that the next time we put a press release out, will there be 1,298 cities, villages, and towns? Maybe not, because we see consolidation, you know, towns withering on the vine, literally. And I can't help but the economic impact of what's going on here sometimes goes undervalued.
Well, you've nailed it as usual. There are communities that are suffering from obviously the economy, but also from population decline. And communities call us all the time. In fact, right now we're in the middle of petition gathering and candidate filings for municipal elections that will take place in April of 2021. We have had probably a dozen communities that call here and say, we can't find anybody that wants to run for office. We don't have enough people to run for office.
Nobody in the volunteer fire department.
Right. The service clubs are gone. The businesses are closing. Now, you know, you and I are both optimists, but we are weighed down heavily by paranoia at times, or at least I am.
Right.
But, you know, we have a lot to hope for. However, the reality is a lot of these communities are suffering. People are moving. And they are probably going to be consolidating with other communities or just dissolving. You saw that in Williamson County about 5 years ago.
Right.
I think it was White Ash. Just dissolved.
Right. It's interesting. Somebody just texted me on the American Manual text line, survival is the reason people leave Illinois. It's interesting because I've got a friend of mine who didn't tell me he was leaving until he posted the Facebook picture of him with his Missouri plates on his car and said, I'm gone. I'm done. Bye. And not the last. I mean, it just keeps on happening because they do. And what's interesting is they text me or message me back and they say, look, you know what's interesting is you don't know how bad it is there until you leave. And I'm like, oh, man. You know, it's just a kind of a kick in the gut. Hey, we're running out of time, and I want to wrap up this. I don't know that you and I will speak again before the end of the year. Is it possible to review this state and what you've done over the last year without saying COVID? I mean, when you look back over the year, what are the accomplishments? What are the high points? What are the low points?
Well, I would say that literally and figuratively, everything was touched by COVID-19 and the coronavirus. So it definitely is going to be the event of the year that has in some ways positive, but in most ways negative impacts. Positive in that I think it's brought some reality to people of maybe what's important in their life and readjusting themselves and the importance of family and friends and maintaining contact. Negative, obviously, the lives that were lost and the health impact and the economic devastation that we've seen, it really has cast a shadow over everything of these last 12 months. So there are some successes to point to, but this was a year of kind of treading water and hoping for the next year. And I think you'll see more people looking for the new year than ever before, and with the hopes that 2021 will bring back some normalcy, but also some prosperity and some stability, and of course, good health and happiness.